From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Happy Easter and welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Dusing in Dallas, Texas. And joining me on the other side of the world is Stuart Balk in the desert of Straya. Say hello, Stu.
Hello. Today I'm known as Biggest Dickus.
You think that's funny?
Wrong Jesus movie. Sorry.
You think that's funny? What is funny about Biggest Dickus? Joining me in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado is based John Grace. Say hello, John.
Hello. Did he say blessed are the cheesebakers?
You're not from Wisconsin, though, so you can't say that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So,
or from Tasmania.
Do they make a lot of cheese in Tasmania?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, brie, yeah.
It's like the Wisconsin of Dingo Land.
Well, they got to have something over there because they got absolutely nothing except that idiot Jackie Lambie.
Well, they've got the cartoon show Tasmanian Devil.
That whole state's a cartoon.
Come to Tasmania.
You remember
get
that?
Married to your uncle and aunties. Yeah.
So this week, we did Apocalypto not too long ago, and we said, one Mel Gibson film, did we do Hacksaw Ridge? I don't know.
Not yet.
Not yet. We said one Mel Gibson film is not enough. We got to do another one. And it's Easter, so we're doing Tom Jennings' favorite movie, Passion of the Christ.
You atheist dog.
Who, Tom?
I don't believe. I only believe in Bruce Springsteen.
I did the Gospel According to St. Matthew episode for Masters of CinemaCast, yeah. And Tom Jennings is like, "Oh, Passion of Christ, I hate that film. I've got the Blu-ray with all the commentaries. I've watched them all."
Yeah, I hate it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Tom, you hate it, but you own it. I'm going to be back on there pretty soon, by the way.
Oh, are you?
Oh. Yeah, I'm going to be doing the 70s version of Silence. Which was recently remade here in the States.
Oh, okay.
There's a 70s version?
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah, there's one from Japan that was made in the 70s. It was never released here. I have the Masters of Cinema DVD. It's quite good. It's quite good. Very, very colorful, unlike the Scorsese one. But the Scorsese one, it goes more in depth into things. So they both have their strengths and weaknesses. Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ. I think we all remember when this movie came out because it was sort of a big controversial monolith when it came out. It was a big, yeah, big, big moneymaker in the cinema.
Yeah.
I think I was a freshman in college when it came out. And it was like this big, not to make a joke, but it was a passion project for Mel Gibson, and
he poured all his money into it, didn't he?
He tried.
Everybody thought he was crazy.
He tried to get all the studios to do it, and of course they passed. And he did it himself, and for a while it was like the most successful independent movie of all time. Eclipsing Blair Witch or Halloween or whatever out.
Yeah.
I think it was probably Blair Witch. It passed up, but it was this big thing. And of course it was very controversial, because Mel Gibson and his dad, with their past, regarding, God's Chosen People. And so a lot of people had problems with, the depictions of, Caiaphas and, the Sanhedrin and all that. But I saw it like three times in the theater. And
my
each
goodness.
Time, yeah, I saw it three times. Every single time I saw it, it was a completely full theater.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Or like the second or third.
Business.
the second or third time I saw it, and this was not like super close together. Like the second or third time I saw it was one of the few times I've sat like in one of the front rows to see a movie because it was just that full.
Because that claw hammer Rickman, the flesh off Jesus' back sitting at the back of the theater, was just wasn't enough, was it now?
No.
For that stuff.
Yeah, I had to feel the pain up close.
Well, it brought out ticket buyers that never go to movies.
Right. No, there were people going to see it who don't go to movies anymore.
Yeah.
At least, and even at the time, you know, I feel like you still get movies that depict this subject matter every now and then. Like we had Risen recently, the Kevin Reynolds movie about the Roman centurion searching for Jesus after the resurrection, which I'll talk about in a little bit. I think Mel Gibson's going to be covering similar ground in one of his next movies.
He's doing a sequel to this.
Yeah, he is. He's doing like the after the resurrection story, which Risen kind of is, but it doesn't focus on Christ and his followers. It focuses on a Roman soldier and his encounter with them. And that's a movie that is kind of it's okay. It has a lot of problems, but you still get these kinds of movies every now and then that go to a faith-based audience. But when this came out, there was like nothing for a long time, and it really took the world by storm. Like
you're
it was
right,
the,
because there was no Omega Code 3, so you're totally
no
right.
Yeah. I remember those movies. Yeah, the Omega Code.
I saw Omega Code 2 in the theater. So,
who was in that movie? There was somebody in that movie.
Like Michael York, Franco Nero.
Franco Nero. That was it. Franco Nero was in that movie.
It's directed by Brian Trichard Smith.
Yeah, that's – oh, my God. That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Potential. The stunt rock, Brian Trichard Smith.
Yes, Man from Hong Kong and Dead End Drive-In. And
we really need to do Man from Hong Kong. I've got to pick up that Blu-ray. I think we ought to do it.
I need to get that, too. I already have the Aussie DVD that came out like 10 years ago, but I need that Blu-ray. Like because it's packed with Brian Trenchard Smith stuff. Mm. Like it's got his Hong Kong Kung Fu movie documentary. It's got I think it has some of his movies on there. It's crazy.
It's got five extra movies of his on there as well.
Yeah. It's a crazy super package.
Yep. All right. But, honey, you were saying you saw this three times in the theater.
Yeah, I saw it three times in the theater.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I wasn't even that active of a Christian at the time. But I really
That's
wanted
only
to
been recently,
weren't
hasn't
Catholic
it?
Either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was like 20. I mean, I started going to church again probably in 2010. But 2012 was when I started moving towards Catholicism. And I think my conversion officially happened in 2013.
Away but, from another religion you don't want to mention, or
no? Yeah. I was a Jehovah's Witness. No, I'm kidding. No, I was a Episcopalian, but you know, but I wasn't that active in the faith. You know, I went to church on Sunday occasionally.
Yeah,
you know, and that was about it.
Did you listen to a podcast and you wanted advice and they go to church?
Yeah, you know, I went to
go to church.
I wrote into this podcast and I said, "How do I get wifed up, fam?" And they said, "Go to church. Get yourself wifed. You'll get yourself wifed up."
Yeah, that Oklahoma minister, you know, and that other guy will teach you well on the ways of Catholicism, I guess.
So, no, it was. You know, I started going back to church because I was kind of looking for something faith-based because, you know, I had that when I was growing up and, you know, sort of drifted away in college. But I was in college when this came out and, you know, I went to see this movie and I was very moved by it. I thought it was very powerful.
Oh,
I went to see it three times in the theater, which if I see him, that's kind of the magic number. You know, I really like a movie if I see it three times in the theater.
Yeah, that's a big emotional investment, three times for a film like this. You know, it's not watching Transformers 4 or whatever it was, Dark Side of the Moon or whatever the hell the thing was. Watching that three times compared to watching this is three times is a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, this movie, And the whole point of this movie, and a lot of people liked to sort of shit on it by saying, it's just torture porn and blah, blah, blah. But
no.
Mel Gibson was trying to make a film that is simply a passion play. It is about the suffering Jesus went through, and he wanted to really kind of emphasize that. I mean, it's a very Catholic thing to sort of emphasize that element of it. Like, he wanted to say, no, I want you to see the suffering Jesus went through for you, you know, for your sins and for the sins of mankind.
Then they try to rip into it in the press by saying, you know, Hitler liked passion plays.
I don't remember that, but
I think they did that because I was reading a lot of press at the time. The passion plays were a favorite of Hitler.
You know, Hitler was also a vegetarian, so there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
And a socialist.
Yes. Despite what some stubborn asses won't
admit.
Well, you know, you had to rebrand National Socialism. It's not National Socialism, it's Nazism. It's different.
Sure. But
we got to take the word socialist out of it. But I don't remember that, but I would never put it past the press to, you know, make a Hitler comparison.
Yeah, Christopher Hitchens was really after this, and Penn Jillette, you know, after doing a bullshit episode about free speech, then he's out condemning this movie and saying it shouldn't be released.
Oh, yeah. He's coming from a big dumb atheist.
As an atheist.
Yeah, Penn Jillette, who has a podcast called Penn Jillette Sunday School.
It's unlistenable.
I like Penn and Teller's bullshit. Don't get me wrong. I quite enjoy that show for the most part, but he needs to take Penn's approach sometimes and just shut the hell up.
Oh, I know. They did this episode where they attacked, like, you know, holy figures like Mother Teresa and the Dalai Lama and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, Mother Teresa, I can understand. She's got a pretty bad rep. She wasn't the
I know.
Ask the kids in Calcutta how nice Mother Teresa really was.
Yeah, she was kind of a bitch.
Yeah.
But you know, he's like using, you know, Christopher Hitchens as their source, and also, like, for the Dalai Lama, it was like all Chinese state media were their sources for it. It's like, okay, come on, how trustworthy is that?
The Dalai Lama. Yeah.
No, I have heard those things about Mother Teresa, but I haven't looked into it enough to form a definite opinion on it. Penn and Teller, I always liked the sort of libertarian stuff, but then when they would get into religion, they always sounded like kind of shrill, you know, the typical sort of libertarian atheists that wear fedoras and are obese and have neck beards, you know.
Oh, exactly, because science tells them working out doesn't matter. They're going to die at 70 anyway. So.
Yeah, of course.
So they can look like a piece of shit. Then he does a diet book that basically destroys every atheist skeptic argument he's made in the last 40 years. And he doesn't even realize it. He's too stupid to realize it.
Wait. Penn did a diet book?
He went on some goofy-ass diet.
Well, like an Atkins diet or something, was it?
It was crazier than that. It was one day you eat nothing but potatoes for a week or something. It was stupid.
Potatoes?
It was the most moronic diet I'd ever heard of. It's like, you fat fuck, just go to the
gym. Hey, you watch your language in this episode, please.
Oh, yeah, we'll have a lot of religious listeners. It's like, it's just like.
I will say there are probably going to be some Catholics tuning into this.
All right, well, they should be used to profanity. But he claimed that he wasn't doing any exercise, but then he's casually admitting that he's riding a bike for like 2 hours a day, like one of those tricycle things. He's the stupidest human being in the world. I never want to hear him again after reading that book. I was just like, he's a moron.
No,
he's
Penn is one of those guys, like the dumb eventually outweighed the insightful for me, and I was
certainly.
I've said before, Penn and Teller, please stick to the magic because you're very, very good at that. Leave it at that.
Yeah, stay with that.
You're damn good at the magic. you know, Brooklyn,
yeah. I mean, it does. It doesn't shock me that Penn went after this this movie, but I don't know. I found Jim Caviezel to be very, very powerful as Jesus in the movie.
Oh, heavens. Yeah, it's this film I had not seen since 2004 when it came out. And I tell you what, I saw it the first time. I didn't catch this in theaters from memory. I didn't catch this in theaters at the time. So I watched it on a DVD rental. The first time. Second time I watched on the Blu-ray I bought on the theater screen upstairs. And I tell you what, I was shaking after I watched. I couldn't believe, because a lot of it had gone from my mind, my memory, except for the whipping of Jesus, which I remembered went on for about 15 minutes. And it was just like, how much more can this man endure? Yeah, how much more is Gibson going to throw at this man? And just... then I forgot about the whole crucifixion bit, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is just... But it's... I gotta say, as a film, this is a masterpiece in every sense of the word. Its look, the way it's shot, the acting, just everything to it is just incredible.
Well, yes, I agree with you, and... I think what makes it so powerful is that it focuses on a very short, brief time in Christ's life.
Yeah, the last 12 hours or something, isn't it, of his life?
Yeah, yeah. And it really focuses on those moments, but it frames it in very poignant flashbacks that I thought...
Yeah, they don't feel too contrived, do they, the flashbacks? They are relevant,
no,
to...
No, you get that sort of... like that moment where he's building a table.
Yes.
And you get that moment with him and Mary. And, you know, the Jesus as a carpenter thing is not something that you see a lot in movies. It's often something that's mentioned but never really shown. And so you get that sort of what a moment in the life of Christ before he was, you know, full-blown preaching. You get like that moment, which is not explicitly stated that the adulteress is Mary Magdalene. But you get the moment where he saves her from stoning, who's played very subtly by Monica Bellucci.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching the film with the commentary by theologians, by some priests Mel Gibson had on, and it was Mel and these priests. And Mel was actually pretty quiet during it. He's sort of listening and occasionally commenting. But they really picked up on a lot of the images in the movie that are so powerful. There's a lot of mirroring with the appearances of Satan.
Yep.
Like the Madonna and Child image, or the snake slithering towards Jesus's feet, and Mary Magdalene's hand moving towards Jesus's feet, and they bring it back to scripture a lot. It's a really great commentary.
Want to hear it. I truly do.
And what's funny is I was watching the movie and it was really powerful even with these guys talking over it. Like, I was still very moved by it, watching it even with a lot of the sound drowned out, because the images are just that strong. Like when Simon of Cyrene helps Jesus carry the cross, and you have the arms crossed as he helps him pick up the cross, and you have like this sort of image of arms crossed over a cross. It's just it's these little powerful things that pick up. And even something like Judas, like they talk about Judas's sin and how he betrayed Jesus, but it's not that different. I mean, Judas's betrayal was much worse, but Jesus is also betrayed by Peter.
Yes.
Peter denies him and says, I do not know this man. I have no idea who he is. And Jesus tells him as much. He says, you will deny me. And Peter says, no, I'm not. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, deny him three times or something, wasn't it?
Yes, and Peter does it. But when Peter realizes it, he begs for forgiveness. He knows what he's done. Judas tries to worm his way out of it. I want to return the money. I did
yes.
not. You know, he tries to find these little ways out, and he eventually hangs himself with the bridle of a dead donkey. And there's also the children. Like, you have these images of children as angels and these images of children as demons. It's very I'm struggling with the point I want to make with that, but it's the more you watch this movie, the more you see these little sort of parallels in it, like that parallel between Peter and Judas.
This was made by a guy who's heavily invested in his faith.
Yeah, it really is. It's funny. It's funny. Like, you can tell when the theologians are talking about it, which ones Mel's aware of, and sometimes Mel's like, "Oh, I did not actually notice that." You know, like, it's kind of funny. Like, some of the ones they notice are there, and Mel's like, "Yes, that's and he'll elaborate on it, and then there's some where Mel's like, "I did not know that." You know. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But even something like that can show up in the movie, even though Mel may not be aware of it. That shows how entrenched he is in it.
Could you imagine the shoot? I was thinking to myself watching this, could you imagine the shoot of this? Just how grueling and taxing it would have been on the actors, and just emotionally and physically as well.
Yeah, they used a lot of the locations, I think, that Pasolini used in Gospel of St. Matthew. I shot it in Italy.
Right.
But yeah, like, especially on Jim Caviezel, my God.
Just unbelievable. Look, I'm not much of a fan of the Oscars, but how this didn't win Best Film, I'm stunned.
Well, it didn't because Hollywood was
Hollywood
pissed
hates, off. I said to myself, Hollywood hates Christianity, Catholicism, whatever you want to call it. They hate it.
They hate Christianity, and they also hate being proved wrong.
Yeah. Oh, that was the big decider right there.
Yeah, it was Mel.
Mel made all that money. None of them did.
All that money went straight to Mel Gibson. You know,
yeah.
It was he basically, they did him a big favor financially by.
Well, I'll tell you one thing: had they financed it, you bet damn well this film would not have been in Aramaic. It would have been in English. Yeah, we want this
in
English, and that would have just no. I'm sorry, the Aramaic. Yes, it's a dead language. I don't know if it's a dead language, that or mine from Apocalypse. I don't remember.
Oh, the Aramaic's dead.
Dead language.
So is Latin. So is Latin. You know. And you have Latin in there as well. And even Jesus speaking to Pilate in Latin. Like, Pilate speaks to him in Aramaic and Jesus replies to him in Latin.
But that was one thing that just felt so authentic about it, was the fact it was in that language with subtitles. And really, I don't think any other filmmaker on earth would have made this film like that unless it was Mel Gibson. I don't think anybody else could have done it like this.
Mel's a very passionate filmmaker. You know, not to invoke the title, but, you know, Apocalypto, Hacksaw Ridge, Braveheart, these are all very, you know, movies that are just violent and passionate and just, you know, they're... You know, every drop of blood, you can kind of feel the weight behind.
When Mel Gibson makes a film, it's not very often, but when he does, you don't forget it. It stays with you.
Yeah. Yeah, even something like Man Without a Face is a movie I only saw once when I was a kid. I remembered that movie pretty strongly.
Yeah, but that was Mel just, you know, getting his chops up and
working his way around the camera and getting the first time.
It's not batshit nuts Mel Gibson.
Man Without a Face was Mel basically saying, okay, I really like Peter Weir.
Yes.
I'm going to make a movie like he does, you know.
Yeah.
Mel famously said he asked Peter Weir for directing tips for that movie.
not a bad guy to ask.
Yeah, Peter Weir said, well, you know, you yell action, and when it's done, you yell cut.
Lazy Australians. So lazy. But one thing as well I really liked about this, apart from everything, was Caleb Deschanel's cinematography is just, oh, my goodness.
I, for- forgot he did the cinematography for it.
Oh my goodness, that guy is a master.
Master
cinematographer. There's very few around these days that are like that still. He's one. Dean Semler is still one, I believe, is a master cinematographer.
And there's not a lot of great ones left. I mean, a lot of cinematography is just like really shitty color correction. Sorry for my language. Shitty color correction.
It says it again, yeah. All right, all right.
I say it again.
Yeah. Vittorio Storaro as well, who did Apocalypse.
He's dead,
now,
isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know if he was going to say, I'm not too sure.
Oh, no, I think he's still around. I think he's still alive.
Yeah, he did The Sheltering Sky. His stuff is just, oh, my goodness, just to look at it. It's just incredible. Yeah.
Storaro is great. I'm thinking of Vilmos Zsigmond. He's dead.
Oh, yeah, Vilmos Zsigmond. Yeah, he's passed on. Yeah, not too long ago. But there was another one. It's just, that's a craft that not just anybody can do. You really have to have an eye for it. And, you know, Deschanel certainly has it.
Mm.
You know, Blade Runner as well is another one that comes to mind that he did.
Yeah.
I think these days there's no demand for great cinematography.
No, you're totally right there, John. There's no demand for it. It's just like,
Action movies are muddy looking and dark and everybody goes...
And same with horror movies. Like, they're all, like, washed out. And
all look the same. I can't tell one from the other.
It's like, hey, you know how this is for adults? There's no color. It's just, like, green, blue, and white.
It's all washed out, whereas Halloween was all based on lighting. Actually, a lot of Dean Cundey stuff is based on lighting. The Fog is another one.
Mm, Dean Cundey, there's another great one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Escape from New York's another one. So these guys know what the hell they're doing.
Jeff and Seth Cronenweth also. Jeff Cronenweth is dead, but his son Seth was quite good as well. I think he did Zodiac, I think.
Yeah, Zodiac's good. That's a bit washed out looking, but I mean...
A little bit, but I thought it was a little more
so. That's more of an ode to the master of Fincher's work than... the cinematography on that one. Whereas Passion of the Christ, yes, is Gibson, the actors, but also it's the Deschanel cinematography.
Yes.
Yeah. Big part of it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, John, you've been kind of quiet. I'm wondering what some of your thoughts are.
I rented it when it first came out on DVD, and it might have been a videotape. I don't even remember. It may have been that far back. But... And I just thought it was okay. I'm not, you know, I'm of the atheist mindset, so the story didn't mean a lot to me. However, I had a friend who was very wavering on seeing it because he used to be extremely religious. You know, he was raised in one of those evangelical type of homes.
Yeah.
And he'd kind of become more atheist agnostic or whatever in later years. And he was kind of like, I don't know if I want to watch it. And I go, well, it's just a movie. You know, I mean, it's either going to convince you or not, but it doesn't mean you can't just enjoy it as a movie, as like a historical or...
as a movie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in mythological... It's just a movie. It's not going to brainwash you or anything. It's like you're going to be what you're going to be. You know, it's not going to affect that. And he watched it. He really liked it. And he said he was crying when he watched it because...
Yeah, so was I. I'm not going to hide
it. He used to take that story extremely seriously when he was a kid. And... to me, it was when I was a kid. I went to a Catholic school, but it was the Jesus thing was just you know, it was the Jesus of Nazareth miniseries, and it was paintings and children's books and stuff, and masses given by priests who had very thick Irish accents, and I couldn't understand anything.
John's probably going to be rebellious and say, "Actually, I think Hail Mary's a better film than this one."
Jesus Christ Superstar. Now there's a Jesus movie, but
yeah. Ted Neely was a better Jesus man.
Yeah, and watching it again last week, I feel like he made – every 20 years you're going to get a Jesus film. And it's going to be made with the current filmmaking trends and techniques. And like Scorsese, when he made Last Temptation of Christ, also a film I didn't care for, it was made like an 80s film. And then before that, you had Jesus of Nazareth, which was made like as a 70s miniseries. And I guess it was also
a
theatrical film in Europe. And you had King of Kings, I guess in the early 60s, which was... Yeah.
Which was Hollywood. The DeMille.
Right. It was the Hollywood Bible epic version. I've never seen it. I guess eventually I need to watch it. Because I do actually, despite my beliefs, I do enjoy Bible movies. I love old Cecil B. DeMille epics and everything. So,
what about The Bible? Have you seen that one?
The one that John Huston directed?
Yeah, I think it was him. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it when I was a kid. I want to watch that one again because Franco Nero's in it. So
there's a very Franco Nero heavy episode, this one. And now conversation beforehand. Yeah, okay.
There's also the greatest story ever told with John Wayne as the Centurion.
Yes.
Really?
Truly, this man was the King of Kings.
Oh, man. The Duke.
Yeah, but then again, he did play Genghis Khan, so I'm not surprised.
I am Temujin.
Yeah. But I had noticed this is probably the first Jesus film made with modern, basically horror movie visuals. The editing and the cinematography that's now a thing that wouldn't have existed 25 years ago, 30 years ago. I used to jokingly call it Lucio Fulci's Passion of the Christ. Because it's extremely violent.
You do have a lot of bugs. You have a lot of maggots and...
Oh, you know, I think Mel watches. I think Mel likes Italian horror. There's stuff in his movies that always feels like it's a tribute to Cannibal Holocaust and all this stuff. So I get the feeling he's watched that stuff, or he likes.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him. And it's a very compelling movie to watch. I mean, it's not boring.
No.
But if you're, let's say you're new to the Jesus story, you're not really going to know why he was a big deal watching it. So it's for the faithful. It's for the people
It's for people who know his story. I mean, you get little vignettes here and there, like little flashbacks, but it is mostly focused on the passion.
Yeah, it was never meant to be a film for people to be converted to.
No, absolutely not. There's no way it could be, And, that's understood watching it. And it's funny, you guys mentioned what it was like behind the scenes. And I know on the IMDb, they act like Caviezel got tortured and injured or whatever. It's at the time before this was released, maybe about a month before it came out, I had just cut the cord on cable, didn't want cable TV anymore, and found out on antenna I couldn't get that many stations. This is before digital airwaves. But I could get one of those religious channels on channel 45 or whatever. And they constantly ran this making of the Passion of the Christ documentary just to fill time.
Yeah.
And in it, Mel Gibson's wearing a clown nose while he's directing and goofing off.
That was the thing. There's special features on the Blu-ray I have.
Yeah.
I didn't watch him. I didn't want to watch him. I wanted to take away the experience of the film only and not see any behind the scenes stuff. It sounds crazy, but I did not want to see anything behind the scenes. So,
this would totally break the illusion because...
Absolutely,
It just looked like they were just yucking it up behind the scenes.
When you do a production with anybody, you kind of have fun with it,
like a prankster and everything, and then he's interviewed and talking about how personal this movie was to him.
He's always had that kind of, you see pictures of him on the set of Apocalypto, and he's grinning with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth with a giant ears, with fire behind him, and he's with a bunch of painted Indians.
I always said that they should, if they're always talking about doing Robert E. Howard characters like Conan or Cull again for the movies, it's like, quit going back to Milius and just ask Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson needs to do it. John Milius is done,
Yeah, he's finished. He's retired. It's Mel Gibson.
He's had a stroke,
Exactly. Give Gibson a big box of bourbon and, in his script, and he'd make a truly Robert E. Howard film.
Give him a box of bourbon and a carton of cigarettes.
He was going to do a Vikings movie, and I was really excited about that.
Berserker.
And hasn't done it.
I think it was going to happen, and then the whole I don't know if it wasn't the sugar tits thing. It was the sugar tits thing. I think that killed it.
Sugar tits killed his deal.
Yeah. I think it was that, and when he got arrested for drunk driving, and he said, "Jews start all wars."
Right. That doesn't help.
He killed the officer sugar tits. So
literally. Insane Mel Gibson. That's why he's one of the greatest filmmaker walking on the planet.
All the great artists are crazy.
It's true. It's totally true. It's really true. But, watching it again, I see it as just an incredibly proficient, competently made Jesus film, although taking a different aspect, you know, basically filming a passion play instead of doing the Jesus of Nazareth approach or whatever. But as it is, I enjoy it more than Last Temptation of Christ, or I wouldn't say enjoy it, but I think it's a better movie.
I don't think it's just another Jesus movie. I mean, it's a bit more than that. This is...
Well, I'm looking at it from the scope of the beginning, from the silence and on. Like, that's how I look. That's how I look at movies. I don't look at it from, you know, that Star Wars perspective. This one movie blew me away and made me a movie fan. I never think about things like that. So,
well, and you know, like you look at it next to Last Temptation, which is, you know, you have the New York accents, and
I thought that movie sucked. And there's people who just love it.
Yeah,
and
I don't particularly care for it much.
Yeah, Keitel going,
Jesus, what are you doing?
Jesus. You know, it was just annoying.
It's going to be just Jay Moore. Here on out.
Jesus, what are you doing, you son of God?
You son of God.
You ruined it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just embarrassing, and everybody fell over themselves praising it because boneheads like Jerry Falwell were protesting it.
Well, it's because it was blasphemous. It's because it's a blasphemous movie.
Yeah, that's all it was. It was ridiculous. And,
it contains, you know, and I think the idea of exploring Jesus' humanity is an interesting one. But when you really look at that movie, it is pretty, you know, it's definitely more made for the critics and not made for a
it's hokey.
Faithful audience. It's pretty intentionally controversial.
Yeah, it's bleh. Yeah. It's like, although Vincent Gallo did say to us, wasn't Willem Dafoe a handsome Jesus? Wasn't he a really handsome Jesus? You know.
Yeah, what was that? Mushmouth? Really?
As Tom Jennings would say, oh, he's Republican Jesus.
Get over it, you left-wing nutjob, seriously.
I like Tom. I'm going to be on his show.
Oh, I like Tom, but, you know.
we love Tom over here. But, you know, but Tom always goes, you know, early on in the movie, his hair's different, and then he transforms into Republican Jesus. He's got the long locks, you know.
Well, there was one thing Mel Gibson managed to do that Martin Scorsese couldn't do with his Jesus film. That's kill somebody. Did you guys hear this story?
No.
When he died watching The Passion?
No.
No. I did hear that story. There was like it was one of those things, you know, whenever you hear about horror movies and like, this horror movie is so scary, somebody died while watching it in the theater. But apparently, like, an old lady died in the theater.
Yeah,
watching.
She was 56, so yeah, not that old, really.
Oh, really? She was only 56.
Yeah,
I was thinking
like Wichita, 70. Kansas. Woman at the theater watching the film, and during the crucifixion scene towards the end, had an apparent heart attack. A nurse was called, the film was stopped, and the woman had died at the hospital nearby afterwards. So,
Hey, man, they don't teach evolution in Kansas.
The Scopes trial didn't apply there.
Yo, man, you know, they just want to teach science out of the Bible.
No, I think Ken Ham is in charge of scientific education in Kansas, man.
Yeah, man.
Yes, yeah, so that was that one. Yeah,
yeah. It doesn't surprise me. Well, it's, you know, I think you're drawing an audience of older viewers who are not used to modern movie manipulation, and so we don't think about that. But if somebody didn't go to a movie for 20 years, imagine what it was like for them to go see something 20 years later. And
oh yeah, if you're not used to like modern violence in movies,
yeah, you're in for a shock.
You mainly watch TCM and with Robert Osborne, it's gonna right. Really mess with you.
I mean, you know, they're just at home watching Ginger Rogers movies, and then they go see this. It's like, oh my God, because they never visualized the story they've probably heard all their life.
Oh my goodness,
one.
This is not on Moonlight Bay. This is nothing like that Doris Day film I watched back in '61.
This isn't the glass bottom boat.
Oh boy. But
No, but I think that was kind of the point of the movie, though, was to
kill people.
No. Well, I mean, you know, you gotta you got to thin the herd somehow. But, you know, no, I'm just kidding. But, no, I, what
it's
I mean
is not
very
nice.
Is that,
there's a pineapple waiting for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got
me and Hitler.
And
is that what you're referring to?
John and Tom Jennings as well.
is that what you're referring to? Little Nicky with
yeah, the pineapple. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really.
I'm glad you got the reference.
This is what's so bizarre is you, Tom Jennings. Very. I'm assuming he's atheist. I would guess.
Oh, cool. Like, is the Pope a Catholic? The Pope's a Catholic. Tom Jennings is the poster boy for atheism.
But left wing, and then I'm somewhat right wing and an atheist, so it's always thrown people off.
But it's kind of sad that you said that, Stu, and I immediately little Nicky jumped into my head.
Yeah, I'm just glad you got the reference because
what have I done with my life? I don't know. but
you guys need to have an Adam Sandler show, and I won't be on it.
We'll do, yeah, I won't be here either. Don't worry.
We'll do the what was that new one? He's got the Sandy Wexler story or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you bring Ezra Doulis out of podcast retirement.
Yeah, we'll. Hey, I'll get Mitch.
Yeah, get Mitch and have like
Mitch, he's moving down to Dallas. So
have an Adam Sandler reunion show of that show. I won't mention.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get Mitch on. It'll be good. It'll be good.
It'll completely throw everybody off from the Phantom Sway to iTunes. So there.
Mm. No, but what I was going to say though was kind of the point of this movie was to really highlight the suffering of the Passion, because it is kind of just a scene in the life of Jesus in a lot of movies, and I think it was to really highlight what a horrific ordeal Christ went through.
I mean, it's just relentless in this film. It's just, it goes on and on. You think, my God, how much more can he take? And he's still getting, he's being kicked and everything as he's carrying across. You think,
even like when he's been arrested, he's being like punched and thrown off that bridge and stuff, like, and yanked up by his chains, you know.
Well, the interesting thing is some serious older Catholics in my family went to see it and didn't like it. They thought it was too violent.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I remember
Bill O'Reilly not liking it because he thought it was too violent. I think he's Irish Catholic or something. So, he got an advanced screening and he said he didn't care for
the R.I.P. Bill O'Reilly, just man who went through his own Passion play recently. The Passion of Bill O'Reilly. Killing Bill O'Reilly.
Killing Bill O'Reilly is his next book. Yeah.
His new bestseller.
By Jamu Green.
Just looking out for the folks. But I knew people of the Protestant faith who were way, way more into this than people.
Well, and it's funny. I knew some Protestants who really hated it too, like some of the more Baptist types who were like, oh, it's too much, you know.
Right. And I'm talking like almost borderline Pentecostal people.
Oh.
So, you know.
So Sam Kenson was.
I never know
how
anything's going to affect. How it's going to affect the viewer. Because I figured all the Catholics in my family would love it, and most of them just didn't care for it.
Well, I know of Catholics that will not watch it.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, Karen won't watch it. It's just, mm-hmm. She's a Catholic, won't watch it. Her mother won't watch it. The sister-in-law won't watch it. All Catholics. Well, we're talking about it over at Easter on Easter Sunday a week or so back. And, told me this film. I said, oh, I've got to watch this film because we're going to be doing it for the podcast. I said, the Karen is a joke. Oh, come watch it. Said, no way. Because she knew about the woman who died from it. And, no, I don't want to die. I said, Debbie's so silly. No one's going to die. I said, that's ridiculous.
That's silly.
Because when I walked out of watching the film, I said, oh, look, still here. I'm still alive. You know, yeah. Much do you
want to do? It's like, and I think John made a really good point. That's probably someone who hasn't watched a recent movie in a long time, you know, and it's just like totally.
No, she watches films. Don't get me wrong.
So it also has, and yeah, I know exactly. And that's what I'm saying is, you know, Karen would probably see it and be kind of used to the tropes. But even then, like that woman probably had like a heart condition or something. You know?
Actually, she does. Yeah, but Leslie as well will not watch it. Devout Catholic won't watch it. So yeah, there's I've heard it from a number of people who just won't go into this film because they've heard about it and they just won't. Yeah. I mean, even I was like, oh, I'm not going to watch it, and I wanted to see it, but I was sort of trepidatious about what I was going to be in for because it had been that long since I'd seen it, and boy, did I get visually assaulted.
Well, I think that was also an interesting part of the controversy was Christopher Hitchens was claiming that the film was popular with young boys who like to see sadism on screen, and
that's ridiculous. That's bullshit.
It is. It's total bullshit because it's like horror movies that are really violent never make that much money. They only make about 20-30 mil.
Yeah,
it's like he's full of shit.
Yeah, no. If that was the case, it's not like you just have a bunch of. Oh, that's ridiculous. No.
His thing was he was offended by Braveheart so much that he decided to, because he thought of it as an anti-English movie. So he had a grudge against Mel Gibson. So
yeah.
That was the whole thing, and they never mentioned that when they would have him on TV and everything. So, and of course he's drunk constantly, he was constantly drunk on TV. So he's just saying all this nonsense, and I was like, all you're doing is promoting the movie. Because people see a drunk like you condemn it, they're just going to go see it to defy you because they don't
want.
And plus,
you want to promote it to somebody. Have a Brit talk about how it's anti-British. That you just sold a ton of Scottish tickets right there.
Right, exactly.
Was it my friend Morgan said that Braveheart and The Patriot were two movies where you went to see that and you were like rolling up your sleeves looking for British people to beat up.
Was Morgan wearing his Antifa outfit at the time?
Oh God, I'll leave Morgan alone. No, he said, yeah, we saw The Patriot and we were just like rolling up our sleeves afterwards, like we're the British.
Yep. Yeah. I thought they would have felt that way after Highlander as well, seeing a Frenchman play a Scotsman.
Oh, well,
and a Scotsman playing a Spaniard.
Spaniard, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's not cool. Can't do that.
No, you can't. It's can't do that. But, I was going to say, another thing I really liked as well, the fact that basically this cast was full of unknowns. Because had Tom Cruise as Jesus, I'd be like, nah, I'm just watching Tom Cruise.
Yeah, like, Caviezel had been in stuff, but he was not, like, he's not an actor anybody knew by name. Like, you know, nobody, the Thin Red Line, he was kind of an unknown in that as well. Like, nobody knew who he was. No. He was kind of the main character in that movie, but, he was way less famous than everybody else, and so his name sort of passed on. But who was the most famous person in the movie? Like Monica Bellucci?
Yeah, I'd say so.
You know?
But even then, she wasn't a face that stood out. It's like, oh, I'm watching
this show, you know? Not in America. I think she was probably more famous in like France or something, or Italy, but...
Mm. But there's nobody... What I'm saying is nobody of... a distinctive variety.
No.
There's no Meryl Streep, thank goodness, as
no, there's
as
nobody.
Mary, you know?
You go, oh, it's that actor. You know, Jim Caviezel really disappears in this role. I've seen him in many movies, and I don't see Jim Caviezel as Jesus. You know, I'm not going, oh, hey, it's Jim Caviezel.
Yeah, it is Jesus.
Yeah, like I'm, you know, Jim Caviezel's, he's kind of one of those actors who kind of, you know, I've always been able to sort of just believe him as whoever he is in a movie.
Oh, he's a solid actor. I mean, this portrayal alone should give you belief in that, how good an actor he is. I mean, people might think, oh, yeah, he doesn't say that many lines, and he's just, you know, getting whipped, and he's got his eyes shut, and he's just staggering around. It's not easy to do.
No, I think his performance is very powerful. Like,
oh,
even
it is.
In the Garden of Gethsemane. Is a very powerful scene where he's sort of in despair, calling out to God, just sort of knowing what's coming. It's a really intense scene before all that starts to go down.
Yeah.
And the disciples are all sleeping.
You're talking about near the start of the film?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the very beginning of the movie.
Right,
and
right.
You have that big full moon up above.
Well, there is a great advantage to casting a non star or an unknown like Caviezel at the time as Jesus, because then you don't bring the ego into the film. Like if, you know, they'd cast some known actor, you know, that's going to affect the performance.
And also known actors are not going to also have to invest the time to learn Aramaic.
Exactly.
And, yeah, it's like Robert Powell in Zeffirelli's Jesus of Nazareth. You know, that's basically the role he's known for. And then I think he kind of disappeared into religious life after that.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he converted. I think the role caused him to convert. It's like who's that? I forget her name, but there was this actress who was in like movies with Elvis and stuff, and she became a nun. And she did like a movie about St. Francis, and she's like a nun. I don't know if she's still alive.
Mary Tyler Moore?
No, not Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, it wasn't Change of Habit did it for her? Okay.
No. No, I need to look it up. I'm going to look it up.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a documentary about her. Oh, Dolores Hart. That's her name.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was in King Creole.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay, so one of the better Elvis films.
Yeah, she's
I mean, I love Maul, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, she was in but she was in St. Francis of Assisi in 1961. And yeah, she became a nun. She like disappeared into monastic life. But there's a HBO documentary called God is the Bigger Elvis. That's about her. Oh, apparently she's still alive. So she's still living as a nun in Connecticut. So
not something I understand. Not a point of view I understand at all.
Seems
Elvis is a very religious individual. He turned the woman into a nun. He turned Lisa Marie, well, not Lisa, Priscilla, into a Scientologist.
Scientologist, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They find a higher being somewhere along the way when after being with Elvis.
He would show up at Ed Parker's school in Pasadena wearing like a turban with a jewel inside it and his karate gi.
Oh, God. The completely king's lost nuts. It. We love the king here, but by God, he's lost it.
By the 70s, he was just... He had become some sort of... I don't know. He had hit a different level of crazy.
Hey, Hunter, I remember over at Graceland, they had the Elvis Presley cookbook. It was like basically a blueprint for a heart attack.
Yeah, how to die when you're 42.
The Elvis Presley cookbook was how to die young.
Basically. How to have like a mile of your colon removed.
It's like deep fried peanut butter sandwich. Like, what are you doing, Jesus. Elvis? You're on a collision course for death for sure. This stuff. But, but what I was bringing up a point I just brought up, mentioned a minute ago was the actors having to learn the language of Aramaic and then, give the line reading convincingly as well. I'd love to know how long they spent doing that. Because it's not an easy language to learn, I'm sure of it. Because I'm sure you can be fed the lines, but then give it with a conviction that you actually know what you're saying is got to be tough.
Well, I mean, Mel is an actor's director, being an actor himself, so he probably knew of ways to do that without making it too much work, you know.
It looks effortless the way they're doing it.
Right. I mean, and he's an actor's director. You don't see bad performances in his movies.
No,
he can,
no, no.
He gets a good
true.
Performance out of actors I can't stand. Andrew Garfield being one.
Andrew Garfield, yeah.
Yeah, he managed to do
that.
Oh,
man. Andrew Garfield somehow managed to turn out two great performances last year. I'm shocked, you know, because I hated him so much before that.
Mel Gibson brought Vince Vaughn's charisma back, which is a rare thing. So.
With one, yeah, yeah. I finished watching Passion of the Christ Saturday night, very, very late Saturday night, and I said, next thing, I've got to see Hacksaw Ridge. I still have not seen it. I'm just going to go buy it. I'm not going to bother waiting for it to come on Netflix. I'm just going to buy it and just stick it in the collection with Mel Gibson stuff, because I can only imagine how batshit nuts it is.
I'm looking up, I thought Robert Powell had some sort of conversion. It looks like he did, but it's not as extreme as
it's
I was led to believe.
You thought
so
it was.
he still played a villain on Matt Houston 5 years
ago? Well, he still was acting after that. I had thought that he had a more extreme
I'd actually like to see that again because I saw it when I was a kid. And I think we watched it in theology class, or at least parts of it. And then I think I found out the Shout Factory Blu-ray is incomplete.
Oh, yeah. The Shout Factory Blu-ray, I have it. And I don't even think a complete version is on video. I could be wrong.
Really?
But it looked way better than the Artisan one.
Okay.
But it's an interesting film. I haven't watched the whole thing.
I remember when it aired on NBC, back when they weren't afraid to air stuff like that.
Zeffirelli is a very devout Catholic. I know that.
Yeah. And, of course, he gave us Mel Gibson in Hamlet.
Right.
Another great
movie. That's right.
Great movie, that one.
Filmed at Castle Dunnottar in Scotland, where I visited.
Saw that in a theater. I remember that. I got a big release.
Oh, you saw that in the theater. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not on Blu-ray yet. Damn. I gotta get me.
That's because they hate Mel. They hate him. They don't want his movies out there.
No, it's true. It's true. They don't like him, and I think that's one reason you haven't seen that the studio released that.
Hmm. Well, bunch of idiots. That's what they are. But I gotta say, myself as a person who is a non-Catholic, but someone who does believe, I was baptized Church of England. This film affected me quite a bit. I gotta sort of say, John, you said that before that it wouldn't be the sort of film that would make someone want to go and seek out Catholicism and maybe even convert. I gotta sort of disagree with that and say I think it would.
I don't think.
I'm not saying you're entirely wrong. I'm just saying I think.
In Australia, it might. There's probably a different level of culture there for that type of stuff. In America, I just don't see it happening.
I hate to be one of those like libertarians. It's like, well, everybody's an individual, but I think it kind of depends on the person watching it and where they are in their life.
Yeah, exactly. If you're having a rough time, something in there, it might hit you at the right time.
Yeah. I agree with Hannah. Yeah, I think it could do, but yeah, it definitely is up to the individual and how they are, and yeah, that's all. That's all I have to say.
I would just say that it was accused of being religious propaganda, and I don't feel that it is. I don't think it's effective for that.
I think it only works
for people who already know the New Testament really well, or already of the faith.
But you don't think it would make someone want to go back and study it up?
I mean, that's always potential. I read theological books every now and then. I don't cast that off as something to ignore. So, but everybody's different. Most people don't read as much as I do. So,
no,
I'm not bragging.
No, that is very true.
I'm not bragging. It's an illness for me. So, it's like I'm just a chronic reader.
What a terrible illness you've got, reading books and gathering information. Now,
it's terrible.
You know? Why aren't you out playing video games, John, at your age?
Why aren't you watching TMZ?
Why aren't you playing Watch Dogs 2 on the Xbox One or something?
Sitting up all night with the new Call of Duty and just, drinking Mountain Dew. Yeah.
Why aren't you figuring out where Shia LaBeouf is? Actually, that's a good question.
He's out counting his money from the latest film. He might.
Well, he's not going to make any money anymore.
Why aren't you finding out where he's hiding the "He Will Not Divide Us" flag?
He's going to be starring in UA Bowl movies in about.
That needs to happen, though. I'm not making fun of that. That's great.
Well, is he even in the Transformers films of the later ones?
No.
He got kicked out by
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair enough then. Good.
Yes.
Michael Bay's got some common sense to get rid of that clown.
I got sick of working with him.
Even though the last Transformers movie was terrible. Ugh. I rented it. I was like, I couldn't even watch it. I was like, nah, I'm done.
I picked up on 3D Blu-ray for about $5, I think. I just got it with my other Transformers.
I was like, maybe the presence of Grimlock will help. No, I didn't even get that far. Just turned it off.
Well, I think I watched Oh, it's my son snoring his head off. I got a lot of the way through the third one. I'm like, man, there's a lot of robots fighting in the desert. This is going on a long ass time. So
yeah,
I've not invested the, you know, 3 and a bit hours, whatever the hell, near 3 hours that the fourth one is. I'm like,
there's really no point. There's really no point.
Although I will say,
the movies are so bad.
I will say, I did, just veering away from the Passion of the Christ for a minute there, I did watch a couple other films in the theater. I watched It Came From Outer Space in 3D up there.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
It's okay. It was my first time.
I
get it. It's a good, rainy day, Saturday afternoon film or Sunday afternoon film or whatever.
I saw it at the Draft House on a revival and really enjoyed it.
Hmm. But yeah, I watched it in 3D. Yeah, it was perfectly fine. It was good fun. Boy, the woman in that film, I forgot her name. There was two of them in there.
Nice. Gorgeous. Lookers.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. I don't know about as good as...
They used to cast producers' girlfriends back there.
Oh, I would not dispute that at all.
I'm sure there's
the casting agent's lesbian girlfriend. Like,
I am very sure there's a whole Harlan Ellison essay about it.
Yeah.
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 But I forgot the name of the one. John, helped me out. The one from The Creature from the Black Lagoon. Oh.
Julie Adams?
Could be. Oh, my God. She's my favorite.
I think it's Julie Adams.
She is my favorite.
Just, yeah, James Ulroy loves her.
He saw
Creature from the Black Lagoon when he was a little kid. He said he had his first sexual experience watching. Like, my God, when they had the camera underneath her.
Oh,
she's
James.
Swimming,
oh,
in that
James.
Lagoon.
Yeah.
Oh, James, you dog.
I that night.
But I also watched Fright Night, the Eureka release. I was like, oh, my God. I mentioned it the other week about how good it looked. That was because I just had a quick glance at it. I sat and watched the whole film. Oh, man, if you guys can get the Eureka release from the UK, it's region-free as well, by the way. I've checked it out. Of Fright Night, go get it. It is, if you like that film, that is the ultimate release as far as I'm concerned.
Because I like that movie.
You're really going to enjoy it. And the special features, they're like 4 hours worth?
Jeez, crazy. Really?
There's a making of on there, which is 147 minutes long, on just making of Fright Night alone. Then there's a 50-minute panel discussion from 2008 somewhere with most of the cast. And a whole bunch of other small bits that Eureka have made up for that release. It's unbelievable, that release. It really is. I really hope they do Fright Night Part 2 from 89. Yes, the film's not great, but I want it just to finish up that collection. Fright Night with the other guy, Colin, what's his name? I don't care. What's that guy's name?
Colin Farrell.
No. Colin Farrell, that's it. Yeah, don't care. Don't care.
Yeah, that was the one with David Tennant. Yeah, Anton Yelchin, yeah.
Yeah, don't care. Chris Sarandon, he ain't, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, no, he was playing... Tennant was playing the...
he was playing the
Roddy McDowell role.
He was playing the horror host.
He was a magician instead of a horror star or horror host, because horror hosts make no sense today because we don't have...
Yeah, them. You couldn't do that.
Yeah, but God forbid we stick to the original script, right, and just making the horror host Peter Vincent.
It actually wasn't a bad movie. I saw it.
It wasn't terrible. I reviewed it
back in the day, and I remember being surprised by it. I was like, this is actually kind of a fun flick. You know?
Well, I know it sits on the shelf in here somewhere. I don't know if... Karen's got it, or the daughter's got it. One of them have it, so I'll just pull it off the shelf and give it a watch, I guess, or give it another watch, I should say. But
it's worth seeing. I mean, I thought it was all right. It wasn't. Yeah. It's. I mean, I like the original a lot more, but
it's not going to erase your appreciation of the original.
Oh, like a good, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can just assure you of that. But
okay,
it's not bad. It's just nothing I would watch again. It's just passable Redbox entertainment. That's
right.
A lot of this stuff nowadays. Like most movies these days.
Do they even have Redbox anymore?
Garbage.
I think Redbox are gone, aren't they?
We still have them.
Oh, you still got... Yeah, I don't think we've got many left.
Yeah, it's still a thing. I see people going up and hitting those up all the time.
I never rent them, though. I just go to the library and reserve Blu-rays. Like, I got Suicide Squad and that Ben Affleck movie, The Accountant, sitting on my
Why? Don't bother Suicide Squad. I got 15, 20 minutes in. I said, oh, I wanted to rip my hair out. It was that bad.
What's funny?
I want to hear what John thinks of it.
Good luck sitting through that 135 minutes, John, or whatever.
I don't think it's not a director's cut. I think I got the theatrical version. The library.
Still a good two solid hours there.
Yeah. I'm sure it's too long. I just didn't see it in the theater because it was too long.
And Margot Robbie's such an annoying woman. I tell you, can't stand her.
Yeah, but I was at a comic book convention yesterday hanging out with Mike Barron, and you'd be surprised how many Harley Quinns dressed up like Margot Robbie I was.
Oh, of course.
Oh,
I'd
imagine. Yeah, yeah.
Of course.
Yes.
You won't see many people dressing up like that that Joker from Suicide Squad. They're all going to be doing the Heath Ledger one or the Jack Nicholson.
Oh, right.
Yeah, not going to be doing the buddy.
They're not going to be Jared Leto. Cesar Romero. Putting makeup over the mustache.
They ain't got the stash for it for a start, Hunter, so no.
When I was a kid, I thought he had a rash.
Oh, I'll tell you what, with that Batman television series on Blu-ray, boy, that stash is accentuated.
Oh, I have that Blu-ray set, and yep, it's right there.
How good does it look, right, that series on Blu-ray?
Oh, it looks great.
60s television, man. It's the best.
That and the Star Trek one, and even the Get Smart on DVD are really good. If they ever put that onto Blu-ray, that would look spanking good as well.
Get Smart looks good, and yeah. I need to break open my Wild Wild West set, because I know some of those seasons look really nice on there.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we're straying a bit too far from Jesus.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, like, we've got to get back to the
together.
Jesus.
You don't really get those two, you know, in the one sort of conversation, but...
Get back to Jesus.
Yes.
I don't know. Passion of the Christ, for me, I think I still think it's a very powerful film. I think a lot of the controversy around it is manufactured in order to I think it was made by the press to hurt the movie.
I was going to say, was it manufactured to discredit the film?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this happens all the time. Like I say recent. I mean, the movie's like, what, 4 or 5 years old? But John Carter is a perfect example. You can definitely see how the press will, you know, even if it's a movie, we see it with politics all the time. But even if it's a movie, the press will coordinate an effort to discredit something. And
They tried to meme it out of the box.
Yeah, they were like, oh, you know, this movie has some agenda, and if you watch it with any sort of discerning eye, you can see that it's totally made up. I mean, you know.
This is what I find really interesting is after this made a ton of money, huge monster hit. I think it actually may have been the highest grossing independent film.
It was. I think it was. I don't know if it still is, but it was at the time. For sure.
I don't think anyone else could have taken its place, surely, out there.
Yeah,
it made a fortune. And the funny thing is, Hollywood started trying to make some Bible films to try to cash in on that. None of them were even close in success.
Nativity story didn't do anything.
They were completely forgotten, and I think it's because they don't hire crazy filmmakers who really believe in this stuff. And I think
even something like Gospel of St. Matthew, which is made by an atheist, that was clearly a guy who really loved the text, even though he was not a believer.
Right.
He was a guy who was clearly very he read it and was like, oh my God, like he was possessed by it somehow. But you have a lot of people making these movies who are, you know, doing it in a journeyman way, like Kevin Reynolds. I don't know what his beliefs are. But, you know, you watch something like Risen, which tells basically it's the sequel almost to Passion, really. It's about the Romans looking for Jesus because the body disappears and the Sanhedrin are... You know, Caiaphas and all of them are coming after them, and they're very much portrayed in the same way that they are in The Passion, really.
I'm surprised a metal band hasn't stolen the name Caiaphas.
Yeah, Caiaphas, or the Sanhedrin. The nice Norwegian black metal band.
They'll be produced by Josh Holm over at the Desert Sessions.
I just got the, at Record Store Day, I got the Post-Pop Depression Live triple LP Iggy Pop thing.
How much money do you make a year in your profession? Because you just waste like God, a damn lot of money on stuff I've never heard of before.
Well, it was the new, it's the new Iggy Pop Live, but it's the Josh Homme Live. It's basically him with Josh Homme.
Never heard of it.
You know, he's the guy from Caius and Queens of the Stone Age. But that Iggy Pop album I thought was great. And so a live album with him and Josh Homme, I was like, sign me up, bought that.
Fair enough.
But anyway, so total aside. Something like Risen, It's a compelling film, but it doesn't have the sort of, I hate to use the word, but passion. It doesn't have that sort of spark in it to sort of, you know, warrant to that moves you the way this movie does, where it's really made by somebody who's totally invested in this.
Well, Kevin Reynolds is a good filmmaker, but he's not.
No, he is. He is.
He's not Mel Gibson. No, he's.
I mean, Kevin Reynolds. I mean, I'm a fan of Kevin Reynolds. Like, I like Fandango.
Fandango. And, yeah.
Yeah. Great movie. You know,
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, even was fun. You know,
I haven't seen that since I was a kid. When I was a kid, I thought it was rad, but you know, who knows?
I couldn't get through it. I thought it was ridiculous.
Oh God.
But
John, there's a pineapple with your name on it somewhere. I tell you, it really is.
I enjoy Waterworld even even though it's basically like a Six Flags show.
I've never seen Waterworld, to be honest with you. I've never seen it. All I hear is Mad Max on water. That's all I hear.
It's Mad Max with sea dudes is what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember Jay Leno going, you want to watch Waterworld? Just put your fish tank in front of the TV while you're watching the Road Wars.
That's pretty good. But you know, Arisen isn't made with that kind of fervor, with that kind of fire. Like Cliff Curtis,
it's not made with that much dare as well.
Well, like Cliff Curtis plays Jesus in it, and his Jesus doesn't move you the way Caviezel's does. It doesn't feel as.
Caviezel was claiming he was having trouble finding work after The Passion, but. He ended up on that J.J. Abrams show, Person of Interest, which ran a few seasons, and it's in syndication, so he's probably set for life just for that.
I wonder if it's the association he had with Mel.
That might could have, be. He also campaigned in Missouri for, I think, a politician who was running against a candidate who was having Michael J. Fox in his ads or something.
Oh, well, there you go.
And I think that actually had Rush Limbaugh saying, quoting Fox himself, admitting that he doesn't take his Parkinson's medication before he speaks.
I remember that, yeah.
In front of Congress, and that was a big controversy. But it's like he's just quoting what the actor said, you know?
Yeah, where he said, "I didn't take my medication, so my symptoms would be increased." So
right, so you'll be all shaky on the mic, which you know is an acting tactic if I've ever heard of one. And
yeah, it's seriously, a pineapple, your name on it, John? I'll tell you. You're not holding back today.
But Caviezel was part of the rival campaign, and I think that hurt him for a while, but he did end up on Person of Interest, and I think that was co-created by Christopher Nolan's brother, Jonathan Nolan, who I believe is somewhat leaning away from the left, you know, if you look at...
Oh, wait, geez, you watch Christopher Nolan movies?
Yeah. You know, that's not a liberal viewpoint, which, funny, it seems completely lost on the actors except for Michael Caine.
I mean, The Dark Knight Rises is pretty much responsible for the alt-right, let's be real.
Of course.
Rename the alt-right Rises.
The alt-right rises.
And now I'm starting to see articles about why The Dark Knight Rises fails. It's like, no, it isn't. It's the most fondly remembered of all of them because it created, it spawned a political movement out of basically a communist character.
Yeah.
Bane's a communist.
Well, he uses communism to achieve his like insane authoritarianism. You know, like he's the League of Shadows. They're like they're total fascists.
Hey, language today, please.
Sorry. Catholics will say this, Hunter.
They're total fascists. They're fascists.
But yeah, that's now become the most memed and quoted on the internet of those three films. And at the time, it was
yeah. Yeah.
We're going to crash this plane.
I need to go back and watch that film again with a bit more woke eyes, I should say.
Woke eyes. With your glove.
I mean, I was woke when I watched it, but I wasn't as aware as I am now. So yeah,
you'll have glowing white eyes probably by the time you're done.
Yeah, you'll be wearing a mask, and it would be very painful to take it off afterward.
Oh, okay.
For you.
All right. I'll see if I can unravel that mystery when I'm watching it.
Yeah. If I take the mask off, will it? It would be very painful.
All right. Well, I don't know what more we can really bring to this.
What do you give it, Stu?
I was going to say, I was incredibly moved by it. I did cry during it this time around. I don't think I did first time. I did this time. And I think what it is because I've become more of a believer since I became a father. And having a large amount of children since this came out. Yeah. And I think when you've... let me go off on a bit of a tangent here. When you see a child born, I really don't see how you could have a sort of atheist outlook on life. Because there's a miracle of creation there for sure. Okay.
And, there's a scene in the movie that gets me every time, and I know it's a very, you know, it's a scene that's designed to make you cry, but it's the one where you get the flashback of Mary seeing the young Jesus fall.
Yes.
And you see her seeing her son fall with the cross.
Oh my God.
And I mean, that even during the commentary, I was like welling up. I was like,
you know?
You know, it's one of those. It's one of those moments where I'm not even a parent, and I viscerally react to that.
Yeah, yeah. So my outlook has changed quite a bit, on the Catholic faith since then. Like I said, I'm not Catholic. I am church.
But your wife is, you know.
Yes, yeah, and my children are as well. They're all baptized Catholic.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen pictures of you at their christenings.
And it's a very big thing in here. They all do. The daughter's done her confirmation. The two oldest boys are now going through theirs, and the other two youngest boys will go through theirs. So yeah, it's a big deal in here. So I look at it that way, and I think I've said for the longest time that Zodiac was the best film of the 2000s. I've got to now reassess that, and so I think this is just
really wow
a film like I've never seen before. I don't think I'll ever see again anything like this, unless we get. I don't know what Mel's going to bring with part two. I really want to see it.
Yeah, you know, with Mel's part two, I was kind of hoping, and I don't think he's going to do this, but I've always wanted to see, and there is a film that depicts this out there, and I have it on DVD and I haven't watched it. I think it's called Peter and Paul. But just the general evangelization that led to the creation of the church, because the Book of Acts, basically, is a story I would love to see on film. But I think he's going to focus on Jesus's encounters with the disciples. I think that's what he's going to focus on.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave it in Mel Gibson's hands because I trust him enough.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No matter what he does, it's going to be. I'm going to be there. You know.
Oh, without a doubt.
Mel Gibson is one of my absolute, probably if not my favorite filmmaker working today.
I think I'm going to change mine from what I did say to Mel Gibson now. I think he's the greatest filmmaker walking this earth at the moment.
I think he's an absolute madman genius, you know, and so no matter what he does, I'm going to see it, I'm going to watch it, but you know, no, but I've always been kind of interested in seeing sort of the, you know, St. Paul and, you know, his sort of
now
road to Damascus and all that.
The question I ask you guys with part two, does Mel self-finance again or does he go through the studios? Because you know they're going to be chasing him now.
I don't know.
I could see them going cold on religious stuff.
Yeah.
Possibly, yeah.
I think, I think it
won't sell in China, although it probably would sell in China, because China's actually got a Christian population and a Muslim population.
China does have a Christian population, and there's the underground Catholic Church. There's the state official Catholic Church. It's a very odd situation over there.
Say there's an underground Catholic Church.
Well, because the state Catholic Church has to be loyal to the state.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, there's been some controversy there recently. And the state Catholic Church is not necessarily, quote unquote, true Catholic. You know, it's, you know, there's sort of a pull there. They don't want to. There's kind of a worry that the underground Catholics, that the state Catholics are going to get officially recognized by the Catholic Church, and they really don't want that to happen. And that could happen, you know, under our current Pope.
The if it doesn't make much money in China, it's going to make a hell of a lot of money in the Philippines. This film.
Oh yeah, yeah. Uncle Roddy will, you know,
he can get totally financed by the Philippines.
Yeah, totally.
Because I think there's a small contingent of Catholics in the Philippines, from what I've been told.
Just a little bit.
It's practically a Catholic theocracy.
Pretty much. Yeah, but so anyway, I was saying
there needs to be a push to make Roddy the Pope. Anyway, no.
better than what they got now.
Oh. Yeah, Tommy. Who they got now? Is it Assisi or Benedict? I don't even know which one.
No, it's Francis.
Francis, yeah. Pope Francis. One more thing of Assisi. I've had a bad night's sleep, people.
Well, St. Francis of Assisi.
That's why, yeah, I said Assisi.
There you go. There's the connection.
Benedict was the microwave pope. He was there for 5 minutes and he was done. And by the way, ain't nobody going to be the greatest pope since John Paul II.
John Paul II was...
Papa was the greatest. That was
he it. Was the, he was amazing. He helped BTFO communism.
Exactly.
So the problem is it's coming back under different branding, but that's another discussion. That's
being helped by the current.
Yes.
Minute honor.
John Pineapple, John, what are you saying?
Listen. I don't want to go into this. I don't want to alienate too many people.
Okay. So that was my question. Does Mel self-finance or does he go through his studio? I say he's going to self-finance.
He's going to self-finance.
He doesn't need them. He doesn't need them, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't need them. That's the thing.
He's got Icon Productions. That's all we need.
Here's the thing.
Yeah. Grace from the 2000s is Passion of the Christ, and it's obviously a 10 for me, without a doubt.
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10, baby. It's unbelievable. Cannot recommend it enough. Stunning. Stunning movie. That's all I can say. All
right. Well, let's get the other end of the spectrum. John.
You know, it's competently, it's exceptionally well made. It's probably ultimate in emotional manipulation from a movie, because I always say movies are really there to sell popcorn. I don't think they were selling much popcorn with this one.
No, I don't think many people were eating during this movie.
Yeah, I don't think they could even drink, Orange Fanta while they were watching.
Oh my God, Jesus, what a barbecue at the end. He was
It's rough.
Oh yeah, he looks like a piece of...
As a film... you know, made with basically Italian horror techniques. It's and by the way, I got a rave review from Rumored Magazine, if I recall correctly.
Really?
Yes.
That almost feels like a prod. I don't know.
Well, they were like, no, he's brought back the full, you know, spirit of the Bible text with this, and that there's horror elements and all this other stuff, which is funny.
Well, there definitely are.
Well, it's funny, for years Stephen King had always said, well, that's the great horror book because there's all this terrifying stuff in there. And
well, like all the stuff with Satan is terrifying.
Oh, it is.
It's very well made. It's
like the maggot crawling out of her nose, like, and it's a woman playing Satan, and the Madonna and child scene is very unsettling. Like that baby, like, it's like, where did that come from? What is that?
From the vision of Mel Gibson.
Yeah, I mean, yes, like that child is just one of the most upsetting things I've ever seen.
My thing is, I would prefer more of an overall Jesus film. You know, let's see the reason why, instead of seeing it in flashbacks and stuff.
So you were saying you want to be sold on why Jesus had all these...
I'm just saying, I think when a movie disciples. Is covering this topic, I think it needs to be more well-rounded and complete. Now, obviously, it doesn't matter. This movie did extremely well for its intended audience. As, like I said, monster hit, and there's a lot of people who just love it, and it seems to get better with every viewing for them. I liked it more the second time than I did the first time. The first time I wasn't really into it. Now I'm more aware of what he does with the camera and how he approaches filmmaking. I appreciated, you know, a lot of that. So, I mean, I give it a 6, and that's not a dismissal or a hatred of it or anything. I'm not one of these goofballs. It's like, I just offended by this movie. Oh, it's the worst thing ever made. You know, it's just like, it's a very well-made film, but it's not my preferred Jesus film. Or
so you enjoyed the Sweeney movie over
yeah,
one of the
I
best films of the last 20 years. All
right. Well,
but I did like what you said about what he was doing with the camera. Like there are a lot of little subtle things in this movie.
Yeah.
Even something like Judas's betrayal, you know, Judas like picking up the coins off the ground and after they toss the shekels at him.
I think it's too violent. I do think it's too violent of a movie.
Really?
And yeah, I do. I think it goes too far. I know that sounds crazy coming from me, but I do think it
goes
too
far. Yeah, I was going to say, coming from you, I thought you'd be one of the least people do. I really care about the
I just
violence,
say there's a time and place for it, and I just, you know, it goes too far for me. And the interesting thing is, he re-released it in an attempted PG-13.
Yeah, the recut. I was going to ask him about that, if you guys had seen
it.
The version for Grandma is Mel Gibson.
I don't think it made very much money that way. That's the odd thing.
No.
You know?
No, I don't think it didn't do really anything.
I will never watch the recut because I think I will watch his vision. Yeah, that's it.
I don't care. It was just sort of a way to, you know, get some elderly people in the theater.
Or families. I guess he wanted to get some families in, but kids aren't going to sit through subtitles.
Right.
tough enough getting them to a Jesus movie when they want to watch, you know, Revenge of the Sith or whatever the hell else was out.
Yeah, what was that?
Rogue
yeah.
One, man.
Return of the King.
I want to watch me that non-Star Wars film, man.
Yeah, that would have been Return of the King year.
Return of the King, and I think Revenge of the Sith and all that junk was out at that time. So.
Oh, that was a year later, Revenge of the Sith.
And I would rather sit through Passion of the Christ than Revenge of the Sith again. So.
I'd rather sit through Passion of the Christ than Return of the King again, to be honest with you.
Yeah, same here. I would too.
And I actually like Return of the King. But
You did? Oh, what the hell's wrong with you?
I like...
I watched that movie on DVD. I didn't see it in the theater because I heard it was like 4 hours long.
Yeah.
And enough people told me it was the best movie they'd ever seen to make me not want to see it. And then when I was watching it, I was stopping it every 25 minutes. And I would go look at myself in the bathroom mirror and go, why am I doing this? And then I would go back and continue. And then 30 minutes later, I would stop it and just go look in the mirror and, you know, lift my hair out of my face. I think I had long hair at the time. And I was like, what am I doing? Why am I going through this? I think when the cartoon elephant showed up, I was just like, I was done. I don't even know if I finished it.
It's the, yeah.
I'll have to send you some articles, man. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to offend anybody.
Good Lord. Oh, my God. Oh, man, I hate myself for sitting through that.
See, John would have enjoyed that film more if it was the GOP elephant. He'd have been like, yeah, right on. I can dig this.
Yeah. Yeah, but they kill it. That's the problem.
No, not now they haven't.
Well,
the elephant's gone berserk now.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. All right, Hunter, let's hear you.
So, I think I'm more on Stu's bandwagon. I don't know if I would say best of the decade, but it's up there with Apocalypto for me in terms of the great films of the first 10 years of this millennium. And I'll give it a 10 out of 10.
Nice.
Because I find it so moving and so well made every time I see it. And yeah, I think it's up there with Apocalypto and movies like that. For me, and Return of the King. No, I'm kidding. But I found it, even when I was sort of lost in my faith a little bit, it totally shook me. And if I see a movie three times in the theater, you know it's great, or I know it's great at least. So.
You didn't ditch Jesus three times like Peter did.
No, I went to see it three times.
Yeah.
But
anyway, that's it. So that's that.
Yeah, I think it's
an incredible movie. Needs to be seen. By the way, I have got some other ratings here. Tom Jennings gave it a 0. The JDL gave it a 0.
Even though he owns it. Who's JDL? JDL? What?
Yeah.
Oh wait. I think I know who you're talking
about. Yeah, yeah. They gave it a 0. Everybody on 4chan gave it a 10.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
4chan. 8chan gave it like 100 out of 10. they gave it an infinity out of 10.
Infinity out of 10, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. But I do want to bring up one last thing. Before we head off for this week, I want to thank two people for donations. I don't know if I've done the first one before. I may have done. Mr. Eric Sulev. Hey, Eric. Oh. Thank you for your kind donation a few weeks back.
Thank you very much for donating.
Yeah. And also, another donation here from Bradford Glandon. And thank you for your donation. Very nice, generous one. Helping the MMC brothers out here. Getting towards our goal. Yes, we do have a goal of a particular figure we want to reach to help get some equipment to get this thing sounding better.
You
might say, oh, well, you guys sound perfectly fine to these ears. But, yeah, we can sound better, trust us. And we have been actually hashing out some plans of equipment we want to buy. And for those of you who hear Garrow's commentary that we did, which will be coming out soon when you buy the Blu-ray and you hear how good we could be. Yeah, we'd use particular other means for that. We do have equipment that we are eyeing off to make the MMC sound that good every week. But we're not quite there with the numbers. But if you guys want to just... Look, if you want to just throw in $5-$10, all right, yeah, might be a cup of coffee somewhere. But yeah, so that's what we were doing. We're just looking at... getting that new equipment and sounding better for you guys on a week-to-week basis. So that's basically it for this week. Hunter and John's got something planned for next week. My butt will not be there. I have other commitments. So on that note, let's wrap it up and say goodnight, fellas.
All right. Just remember to go to MidnightMovieCowboys.com and donate on the right-hand side if you feel so inclined. If not, please rate and review us on iTunes.
Yes.
Because that helps without having, you only have to donate like a couple minutes of your time. So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, the Phantom Sway, and yeah, adios.
And I'll say Magadog and peace out, everybody.
Peace out.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.